Blog Talk Radio.
Healthcare is an in-home healthcare agency focused on providing high-quality service and customer satisfaction for our clients while providing a professional staff that meets all the client's expectations. With over 11 years of service in the industry, Beyond Healthcare Agency goes above and beyond the personal needs of our clients by taking a deliberate approach and interest in making sure all the needs of the client are met. Whether it's Medicaid-related issues, communicating with their caseworkers, and so much more, we assist clients from medical transportation, meal preparation, hygiene and grooming, to just being a companion in times of need. Medicaid, private pay, and long-term insurance accepted. Daily or weekly care are available upon request. Beyond Healthcare, 2617 Chapel Hill Boulevard, Suite 8 in Durham, North Carolina, is affordable, reliable, and insured. For info, call 919-249-5753. You can email them at homecare@beyondhealthcare.info or visit them at beyondhealthcare.info. Beyond Healthcare Agency. We go the extra mile.
ID Life is all about providing you and your family the best nutrient supplements. All natural, organic, gluten-free, soy-free, and non-GMO products for both you and your children. When it comes to nutrition, one size does not fit all. And Envision Wellness is very excited to share with you an individually designed vitamin program, along with a host of other programs to aid your quest for great health. That's why I am an independent associate with ID Life. Take a free, confidential, HIPAA-compliant online assessment based on your diet, lifestyle, then receive a personalized supplement recommendation. For info, call 919-519-7298 or visit us at www.envisionwellness.idlife.com.
Exceptional Service Home Care Agency Accelerated CNA Training and MedTech Classes are tailored to fit your schedule and budget. You can become a CNA with our four-day course, take the state exam in about 2 weeks, and be working on your way to a rewarding career with Exceptional Service Home Care Agency or in the medical field. Unlike other CNA prep classes, we can offer you a job with our home care agency. If required, background check and hiring process is successful. MedTech tuition is $200. CNA tuition, $350. You can make payments. Last payment must be made before class starts. For info, call 919-309-9065, 919-225-0538, or visit us at www.exceptionalservicehca.com.
And welcome back to the Bachelor Pad on blogtalkradio.com. Thanks to Jim Williams, of course, from News Talk Florida, talking some politics from a different perspective. And we'll go back to the lines, on the line, patiently waiting to talk more politics with us. Of course, always good to have this young man on. He's the chairman of America's PAC and research associate at America's Majority Foundation. He is one Tom Donaldson. Hey, Tom, what's shaking, man?
Oh, not much. Just waiting around for tonight. Another night, another couple of primaries, and who knows?
But yeah, and before I get to that, Tom,
you call me a young man. You just gave yourself a brownie point.
Checks in the mail, right?
Checks in the mail.
Let's just, before I get to that, just two things sports-wise. Congratulations to the Lady Panthers of Virginia Union on a great season. Unfortunately, they came up a point short in the quarterfinals, 53-52 loss. But they have a phenomenal year, a lot of talent coming back, so I'm sure they'll be coming back to be at the top of the CIAA Women's Conference again. But congratulations, Coach Gilbert and their squad for having a terrific season. The other thing, Tom, I want to ask you, I know when I talked to you yesterday or the other day, you were watching some basketball. Any surprises in the NCAA so far? Michigan State probably being the biggest one. You know, they complained they weren't on top seeds.
You know, actually, yeah, that was to me the biggest surprise. Obvious. Well, actually, the second biggest surprise. The first biggest, seeing a team blow a 12-point lead in 30 seconds with Union,
yeah.
Northern Iowa. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. But
yeah, well,
interesting enough. Now that we've got into the Sweet 16. You know, it's one of those things, you've got that first weekend of surprises, but in the end, you look at it and the big teams are still there.
Yeah, and it's going to be some terrific matchups. When you look at all of them, Tom, top.
I want to bring in my next guest. She is a franchise opportunity expert. She's a business strategist, a consultant, coach, if you will. For the first time on the show, she is Mariel Miller. And listen, we appreciate you coming on. You got LA Bachelors alongside Reggie Howell on the line.
Well, hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I wanted to have you on. You have a lot of experience, well over 27 years of experience as an expert, advisor, and coach. What's a franchise coach and advisor? What is that?
So, you know, it's interesting. It's sort of a new career, if you will. It probably started back in 2002 or 1 or something like that. And there are about 1,000 people who do this kind of work in the U.S. today. So what we do is we act sort of like a cross between an executive headhunter and a realtor. And we work with people to identify what are the key characteristics they need in a business, and we help them create an ideal business model, and then we go out and we search franchising, the whole landscape of franchising, for the businesses that are best suited for them, and then what we do is coach and educate them as to how to conduct a thorough due diligence so that they don't make mistakes along the way, they don't miss anything.
So essentially they're starting out with the business plan, they have a vision of what they wanted, but you help them, you connect them with a franchise or a business franchise that's already in existence to get them that opportunity to become a franchisee, or is it something from the ground up?
Well, no, that's exactly right. So oftentimes people don't really have a vision or a plan. They just know that they might want to either replace their career with their own business or to build wealth on the side with semi-passive businesses. So they sort of know that much, but not necessarily what are the most profitable businesses out there and how do I get started. So that's where we come in and we connect the dots and we introduce them to quality franchisors. We get them through the process so that at the end of the day, they get an offer for the business that they want.
Do you also help them in terms of trying to find that income, that monies to buy into that franchise? Do you help them do the research on that as well?
Yep. We're going to work with them and create a team around them. So there will be finance experts. There will be legal counsel, everything that they need during their discovery process to make sure that what they're getting into they could afford, and that all of their contracts, are up to date, and, if they have any legal questions, we put them in touch with those folks as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and part of the question I was thinking about when we discussed having you on is sometimes, people trying to start businesses, I think the average business fails within less than 5 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
How do you deal, or do you hold their hand when they're frustrated to get to a certain point to find that franchise, and maybe they hit a little bump in the road? Do you work with them on the psychological side? Is it working towards that frustration that may kick in?
It's such an interesting question. It's mostly fear, right? In the phase that we're working on is acquiring the business. So we deal with a lot of fear and trepidation and, legitimate concern, and sometimes concerns that aren't really, real. But we deal with all of that along the way. Because we're dealing with top quality franchise systems, once they're placed in the franchisors pick it up from there, and they offer fantastic training and support programs. And to your point, if a business is going to fail, it tends to fail in the first 2 years. So in franchising, what you're paying that franchise fee for, in essence, is really to get past that. You're going to have an awful lot of support and training and help along the way to get through that first phase, that business launch, where you would not have that on your own. You also have best practices of everyone else who has gone through it. And as people go through their launching of their business, the best practices continually get refined. And all of that, the what to do and also, more importantly, what not to do, is all filtered back into the operating protocols so that they're handed to you when you buy the business.
Talking with Mariel Miller, of course, franchise opportunity expert, business strategist, and consultant. You see different businesses on TV and the popular ones. I'll just use McDonald's. Are there businesses out there, franchises out there, that maybe people get the wrong perception of that I want that. That's what I want to be a part of based on what my vision is and based on what I see. That's got to be that franchise that I want to be a part of. Do you get any of that, the misconceptions of some of those?
Yeah, what a great question that is. That's like 100% of my work, I'd have to say, because I believe that my work is to take a person from a consumer mindset and turn them into an investor mindset. So when people call and they say, people have to eat, so I want a food business, or, I once had a client, she really loved chocolate. She wanted a chocolate store in the mall. So the idea that you should follow something that you either like or think you're good at is a very narrow, unsophisticated way to evaluate business, right? What we want to do is we want to take a look at what are your transferable skills and what kind of quality of life do you want and what kind of money do you need to earn? And
right.
Then what happens is it's a broad search, and I would say 90% of the time people end up placed in a business that they would have never found on their own, because the average person looks at stuff like the consumer and says, well, I like Italian ice. Let me open up one of these. Or I'm not really into Mexican food. I would never consider that, So we do a lot of that. There's a lot of education involved.
Before I kick it over to my colleague, Reggie, one other question. If the flip side of that is the person who wants to get connected with a franchise, right? So do you ever turn people down that either are hard to work with, or that you just don't think that based on what you've found out about them and all the research that you had and conversations with them, that maybe they're not, and I don't know if you can tell them that maybe that business, starting a business or being a part of a franchise, it's maybe not something they should do?
Yes, as a matter of fact. The first step is we figure out, is business ownership right for you? And then we figure out, is franchise business ownership right for you? Because it comes with, you know, certain pros and cons. The other piece is, part of the discovery that we do before we even go shopping is we build this ideal business model. And when we do that, if the expectations are really off, you know, the charts, if they want to put in $40,000 and have a business net out $140,000 in its first year, you know, I have to tell them that business doesn't exist, right? Another thing that we do is we do a competency test or an assessment of leadership, management, sales skill. We look at who the person is because depending on the franchise, who you are matters to some degree or another. So if it's like a location, you know, driven business, like drop off your dry cleaning kind of a business, who you are as that manager, you have three people working, you know, who you are and your say your sales skills aren't as important as if it's a home-based business where you have to get up and out every day and build brand. So we look at the person and we look at their expectations and we can determine within the first couple of hours of our, you know, of our process, is business ownership right for them? And if it is, could franchising be a vehicle to get them to their goals?
That saves time. You don't waste your time.
Yeah.
And they don't waste theirs. We're talking with Mariel Miller on the pad. If you have a question, hit us up, 646-929-0130, or you can hit us up on Facebook at Pad Nation, on Pad Nation 2 at Twitter. With that, I turn over the questions to Reggie Howell.
Good evening, Ms. Miller. That's conflictable. I don't want to pronounce your terminology wrong. I don't know if it's Ms. or Mrs. I just want to make sure I address you in the proper manner.
That's fine. Thank you.
Number one, how do you keep a person from not only injuring themselves when it comes to money laundering? And I say that because a lot of people will have money and all of a sudden they won't get into a business. Then you find out they're laundering money. How do you kind of protect yourself against that? That's question number one to follow up, if I may.
Wow, I don't think I've ever been asked that, nor have I ever considered that.
Real with you.
Yeah, you know, part of our process, the clients fill out a confidential questionnaire, and it gives us particulars about their financial situation, like net worth and liquid capital, and where that money lives and where it's going to be coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think I've ever worked with anybody who paid 100% cash for a business. People are financing through the government. People are using 401k funds, et cetera. I've never had someone offer me, you know, a couple hundred thousand in a brown paper bag. That hasn't happened yet. Now, that could happen, and I don't know that I would work with that person.
Yeah,
but I've never really dealt.
Curious thing. No offense, but these athletes out here and some even – entertainers do some strange things sometimes. I mean, when you have people like Chuck Berry used to put his money in the mattress rather than the bank, then you never know where money might come from.
Yeah, yeah. I think the problem I see more often is not having enough money rather than having, you know, too much money, yeah.
Right. Now, when it comes to certain businesses, what's your thoughts, number one, about the show Shark Tank? And number two, what's your thoughts about the vending business, such as vending machines?
So I think Shark Tank is a real game changer in America. I think it's a fantastic show. I mean, anecdotally, I watch it with my girls. You know, we pause it and we try to guess what's going to happen, and we make, you know, educated business conversation out of it. And people, mm-hmm. I think it's changed the lives of many people who, you know, who could consider entrepreneurship as a career path. Because mm-hmm. up until Shark Tank, you know, how often did you talk about that? It's kitchen table conversation. So I do think it's pretty neat. It's a pretty neat way to look at businesses emerging.
Mm-hmm.
What was your second question?
The vending machines, such as cigarettes, candy, even these new things now where they got a yoga machine, what they call vending robots. What's your thoughts about that?
Yeah, my thoughts about that. Well, let's see. There are 3,300 franchise opportunities that are out there today, and they cover about 34 different categories. So I believe there's something for everyone who wants to get into business. Now, the vending choice has its challenges. You know, placement of the machines is oftentimes very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
How you have to pay the people, the kickback, or whatever that piece of it is, and just getting placement in some cases. You could be locked out of particular areas and cities and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never worked with the vending machine businesses. It's never been an area that I've specialized in. I work with
mm-hmm.
really full-service businesses, business format franchising, so getting people into, you know, everything from home-based businesses to, you know, restaurants, let's say, everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never really, I mean, people bring it up every once in a while, but most people want to replace their income and increase their net worth. And they want to do it pretty efficiently. They want to do it, you know, within a couple of years.
Right,
and
right,
I don't
right.
know how many of those you're going to have to own in order to replace, say, a six-figure salary, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little
right.
slower go, I think.
Right. And one final question. Do you have malpractice insurance pretty much like
yes.
somebody said that, oh, you do?
Yes, errors and omissions insurances, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, because, I mean, unfortunately, there are some unscrupulous people who will sit back and try to blame
yeah.
you for their incompetence.
Oh, it happens, yeah, absolutely. Well, because there's no 100% guarantee with anything. You know, using
mm-hmm.
this kind of service, I think the biggest benefit is it's very efficient. So left to your own
mm-hmm.
devices, it would take you 1 to 2 years to narrow it down and find a business. And our process is about a 90-day process. Between
right.
3 and 4 months, you're going to have a business offered to you that you would want to buy. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's really efficient, and it's as targeted as you're going to get, but there's no guarantees with anything.
Right, right. Just
so,
one final
question. We have to cover ourselves.
Right, one final question. Are you able to network with other people so maybe you can get into the door with some celebrities? Because a lot of these young athletes and even entertainers now, we're looking for investments, so they would have to be on that stage rest of their life and be working till they're 70 and 80 years old when they can start investing now. And that's my final question. Thank you for your time.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. That's a brilliant angle. I haven't thought about the entertainment population. I do have a couple relationships with sports figures, and down that route, they really do like to look and investigate franchise opportunities, it's particularly the semi-passive opportunities where you can work between 5 and 15 hours a week and run multiple units of something. So that's the model that a lot of those folks like. I think I would like to get involved actually in the entertainment side. That's really a terrific idea because those people, like anyone, need an exit strategy. They need a plan B. They need a retirement strategy.
Muriel, it's L.A. again. I got a question, and they said, as an African-American, what opportunities, because I guess you mentioned, you know, government money in terms of funding it to get into a franchise, what avenues with the government are available for minorities who want to get into a franchise, and do you see any sort of racial resistance with some franchises trying to match them up with a particular person?
So in other order, so I don't see any resistance. I think that it's very, minority friendly. You know, this is really about looking at a person's skill set and their financial qualification. The very best franchises out there know what their ideal franchisee looks like. And they use people like us, they educate us as to who they're looking for, and we go out and find those individuals, right? We go out and find those people, and we make the match. So if you're working with a very, you know, high-end, top-producing, good, solid opportunity, it's really about who are you internally, what are your competencies, what are your transferable skills, what have you done in the past, and could you afford it comfortably? And you would get the same, right, whether you're black, white, female, or male, you know, you would get the same process, the same treatment, the same opportunity. In regards to the SBA, I was mentioning the government, there are really no grants available. People sometimes ask me about grant money. There really isn't grant money for as easily as people think that it might be for business ownership. There are, however, government-backed loans. So the SBA has a program called the 7A loan, and it's very franchise-friendly. The banks love franchises, and the government backs the loan up to 75%, so the banks use it very often, and it's not a difficult loan to get. You would need a 10 to 30% cash injection, and the rest of it is financed over 10 years. So there's a lot of money out there for franchising. Yeah, there's a lot of money out there for people that are interested.
75%, that's a good number there. Let me ask you this. Having been in radio for 25, whatever years I've been in, and a lot of times people ask me, you know, in terms of advertising, what station or what media outlet should I advertise? I know in our area, we look at demographics and, you know, who's your target audience. Is that some of the strategic things that you guys look at in terms of matching that person with that franchise based on, you know, not just, okay, people need to eat, so they want, you know, McDonald's, but, you know, they're looking at a certain age group based on, you know, that age group, X amount of money. How do you strategically match it up?
Yeah. So every franchisor knows their footprint. So they're really responsible to cut up a territory that they're going to sell and say, this territory can produce average results. Okay, so whether that territory equals, you know, 40,000 senior citizens, or it's 100,000, you know, school-age children, or it's a particular demographic, whatever that might look like, the franchisor is responsible to know it's a recipe for success. So during the due diligence process, you know, we encourage these clients to go and figure that out, talk to the franchisor, and then do a competitive analysis in the marketplace. Because what they really, like, I always say it's 80-20. 80% of franchising, you know, is going to work everywhere, and about 20% is culturally different, the South versus the North, or Texas versus New Jersey, or, you know, little changes, right? But 80% of those business processes should work all over the country. But what is unique to a market is how many competitors are there, right? So if you're going out there with a pet hotel, let's say, the pet sector is doing really well right now. The franchisor doesn't know how many pet hotels there might be in, you know, in Raleigh. They might not know that. So we do a little bit of analysis from that standpoint, from the competitive landscape. When it comes to what you had originally asked about the advertising and marketing, all of the top franchises out there, they have very robust marketing programs, and they know to the dollar what needs to be spent, how it needs to be spent, what does that media mix look like, where to spend, how to spend. So it's all done at a corporate level, and those plans are given to the franchisee to execute on a local level.
Wow. Final question for you, and this has been a very good half hour. I have an advertiser on my program that has a home care agency, right? And is growing in leaps and bounds. So the opposite of that, I guess, if you will, how do you create the opportunity to be a franchise? Do you deal with people who have one business and they want to grow into a franchise? Mm-hmm. And how do they get to that point?
So I spent several years with emerging brands, and I did a handful of brands, bringing them from a napkin to, you know, to a franchise, taking it national. So I had some experience in that over the years. I don't no longer do that. There are many firms that specialize in that. What's required typically is at least a couple of years, 2-3 years of proof of concept, and it costs around, I would say, the real number is around $200,000, $250,000 to franchise a business. And that money goes to creating all of the legal documents required for that company to sell its units all over the country. And then once that piece is done, there is a marketing budget necessary to be out there playing with the big boys and looking for franchise candidates. So the first step is to do a feasibility analysis, and that's basically to say, is this business franchisable? Does it have proprietary systems, you know? Does it serve a need? Does it do it uniquely? Are there best practices, and are they, you know, written down and documented? Can we duplicate this? And a lot of people who want to franchise, the first thing they'll do is they'll get friends or family to open up another unit, maybe in another county or another state, to get more proof of concept, and maybe run that for a year. So now you have, instead of just the one unit, you might have 2 or 3. And that's a much more attractive little business to then, you know, take to one of the companies that is going to take you national.
Wow.
So does that
you
answer
you have all
question?
The answers there.
Yeah.
And listen, before you go, let folks know how they can reach out to you. I'm sure some people out there listening, as we got some tweets in there about how they can get started. So how they can reach out to you and follow you as well.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So my website is thefranchiseadvisor.com. That's ADVISOR, thefranchiseadvisor.com. And you can call me directly at any time. That number is 732-298-0900. My email is Mariel, M-A-R-I-E-L, at thefranchiseadvisor.com. And I'd be happy to talk about franchising to anybody who is curious.
Well, we're definitely going to make sure we share that information out there and your web as well. And as I said to you off air earlier, let's not make this just one time. We'll have you on some more. And I appreciate the time this evening.
Well, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to talk with you guys. Thank you so much for having me. I hope it was hope people got something out of the talk.
Absolutely. Very insightful. Thank you so much, Mariel.
Okay. Have a great night.
And welcome to the Bachelor Pad. We thank you for joining us this evening on the pad. Thanks to the Donaldson Files, Tom Donaldson, Coco Cosby, for the show or previous. We appreciate them being a part of the network. It's L.A. Bachelor with you. We have a power 2 hours of informative and very thought-provocative sort of tragic stuff to talk about in certain discussions. And I want to go to my first guest. She has been fascinating and really investigating human trafficking. And she has uncovered so much all over the planet, if you will, and especially in countries or considered third world or considered other types of places where it'd be state-sponsored human trafficking and otherwise. For the first time on the show, she is Nancy Hartwell. And Ms. Hartwell, we appreciate you coming on the Bachelor Pad.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to bring you on because we in this country talk so much about so many things in politics and other issues. But one of the most horrific things that takes place all across the world, and you've done this investigating, I think on your website you said that the sexual exploitation is between 600,000 and 800,000 kids being not only trafficked but also treated as second-class citizens, as, especially when it comes to women, and being abused in so many ways. How did you come across this? What got you, I know, in reading your story, but how did you get involved with this? What was that one thing or that one person or that one situation that really got you to investigate this?
Okay, well, when I was in my 20s, a good friend of mine named Ursula just disappeared. They found her bicycle next to the road, and nobody has ever seen her or heard from her since. And a couple weeks later, we heard rumors that were probably true that she had been sold to a sultan in Libya. That spooked me so bad because I thought, holy Toledo, that could have been me. And I started collecting stories, and once people know that you're interested in this topic, you get bombarded with stories. And 45 years later, they finally appeared in a series of three books, my human trafficking series that is available on Amazon.
You know, I wanted to bring home the fact that this people take this for granted. I mean, when we're kids, our parents told us, you know, don't go to strangers. You know, you take those precautions. This is going on in some of the corners of the world. It not just in borders like in, you know, in Mexico and here in the U.S. And we have, you know, even prostitution and things of that nature. But you talked about the Taliban. And how they treat and threaten and physically and mentally and verbally abuse women in particular. Talk about that. Is it normal in countries like that or third world countries where it's sort of state-sponsored, like it's okay with the government, whichever government it is, to allow these things to take place?
Well, in some countries, the government actually promotes it. The Taliban, and by the way, in Arabic, ironically, the word means scholars.
Wow.
They have bombed schools where girls attend. They do not allow women to wear any clothing or shoes that makes any noise whatsoever. If a woman wears perfume, they say that is tantamount to having committed adultery, and it's a capital crime. Women are not supposed to leave home except to run an occasional errand for any reason whatsoever, even to attend things like family weddings. Women are supposed to stay home unseen, unheard, completely subservient to men. There's even one Taliban, quote, scholar, unquote, who says that if a man rapes a non-Muslim woman, she is automatically converted to Islam. I mean, I don't know where they get some of these crazy, crazy, crazy ideas. Mainstream Islam, of course, is embarrassed, but the Taliban have a lot of followers and a lot of support, and in Afghanistan and parts of Pakistan, they are in charge. So, and not exactly fun.
We're talking with
nobody is allowed to listen to any music, even men.
Wow.
Music is detrimental to the soul.
Sarcastically.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I wondered about this is how do they operate? How do traffickers operate? How are they targets? Is there an age group that, you know, in terms of kids that are taken on average, and how can parents kind of protect them maybe above the norm that parents normally do?
Okay, good questions. It's young people who are normally targeted. And by the way, labor slavery is much more prevalent in the world today than sexual slavery, but it doesn't get nearly as much press. And the typical scenario is this. Somebody will go to a poor country or put an ad on an internet where they know that young people like to visit and offer some wonderful opportunity, a great modeling job or a high-paying job with good benefits so that they'll be able to send money back to their families. The young people, like from poor countries like Somalia and Afghanistan and Pakistan, sign up in droves because they say, yes, this is our salvation. The labor contract says that they will pay for transportation to the site of the job, and that happens. And families give going away parties because they're so happy that their son or daughter will be able to send money back home. Then when they get there, suddenly everything changes. All these promises go up in smoke. They confiscate the travel documents, lock them up, make these people work 18-hour days without pay, and the World Cup is supposed to take place in Qatar on the Persian Gulf in 2022. The facilities are already under construction, and they are being built by slave labor. Conditions are so horrific that they have been averaging a death a day. Where is world outrage here? Nobody knows. That's what we're talking about. These treated like just totally expendable things. Oh, dear, that one broke. We'll just have to go get another one. It shocks me that the human race has not advanced beyond this by now. But the State Department, that's not known for being really wild, estimates that worldwide there are more than 30 million people held in slavery or slavery-like conditions on the planet Earth today. This is more than at any other time in human history. Hello, people. This is not a problem that's going away tomorrow. We need to wake up and realize what's going on.
You know, Nancy, I want to. I have another question before I go to my one of my co-hosts, Reggie. What organizations are out there? Are there any kind of covert type of situations to get people out? What is being done around the world about this, or trying to be done?
Okay, well, the State Department comes out with a very interesting study every year, and you can download it for free on the State Department website, by the way, a country-by-country analysis of human trafficking around the world. And they classify the countries in four different tiers. Tier one, where it's a problem that the countries are trying really hard to do something about it. Tier two, where the countries are kind of sort of making an effort. Tier three, where it's a huge problem and the countries are finally waking up to the fact that it's a huge problem. And tier four, where the countries, the governments are actually active participants in human trafficking, like Yemen and ISIS, etc. There are organizations that try to combat this crime, but it is very, very difficult. The Russian mafia is into this big time. They used to just operate in Russia and Eastern Europe, but they noticed that there was a vacuum. And so now their tentacles are everywhere. And these are real professional criminal predators. They know all the tricks, and they are very, very, very hard to bring down. There are crooked customs and immigration officials everywhere. And by the way, a really good-looking blonde, young, can be retailed for more than $100,000 on the Persian Gulf. And as long as somebody's willing to pay those prices, somebody is going to supply the market. And if you have to pay a $10,000 or $15,000 bribe to somebody along the way, hey, that's just part of the cost of doing business.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Putting a number on a human is just, you know, it just is beyond me to that actually, you know, you hear about this, but then when you break down the numbers and you expound all the information here, it makes it, it hits home a lot more.
Scary. It is really, really scary. I have a picture on my website, by the way. I offer a free 5-part course in modern day slavery and human trafficking. All you have to do is give us your email address and you can download it for free. Picture there of a maid from the Philippines who was, quote, working in Saudi Arabia. And she happened to serve coffee late one morning, so they poured boiling water all over her. She had second-degree burns all over her body, and that picture is on my website. This is how they treat people who are forced into this kind of slavery. It's unimaginable what these people live through. There are some brothels, by the way, where it is so brutal that life expectancy is calculated in weeks. This shocks me. I've written 3 books about it, and I still am totally shocked by these practices, by this total disregard that these are other people, especially women, especially non-Muslims, on the Persian Gulf. They are treated like totally, totally expendable objects.
Mm. Yeah. We're talking with NCJ Hartwell, of course, Uncovering Human Trafficking. You can check out her website, nancyhartwell.com, and the download of the Human Trafficking 101 is there. All the book information is there as well. I want to go to my good friend and colleague, Reggie Howell. I'm sure he's got some questions for you.
Okay.
Yeah, good evening, Nancy. How you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
First of all, peace and blessings to you. In the name of the Creator, God bless you.
Thanks.
For what you're trying to do. So we need to give praise to you and just being a month of the woman.
I'm not doing nearly enough because the problem keeps getting worse. But anyway, thank you for your kind thoughts.
Obviously, you're doing plenty because you're bringing the tension when, like, our government would not. But have you had any death threats against you for exposing these criminals?
I have had some strange things happen to my website, and I think I was hacked. But except for that, praise God, I have not yet been subjected to death threats.
Well, we're definitely going to ask the Creator to put their arms around you. The World Cup soccer a couple of years ago in South America, I'm sure you're familiar with the sex trafficking that went on with there. Could you speak on that? We do our homework.
Yeah, wherever there are big crowds, especially crowds of men, there will be sex trafficking. In the Super Bowl, in any, almost any kind of sporting event, there will be human trafficking. There's recently been some action against hotels that have been turning a blind eye to what's been going on. And now some of the former victims are actually suing hotels because they would open the room, a locked room, where the women were being kept, and let men in to rape them without ever inquiring, well, wait a minute here, what is going on? Why do these men need to come into this room? What exactly is happening here? They just let them in, and which is one little ray of good news on this horizon that hardly ever has any good news. It is a very, very difficult crime to counteract, as I've mentioned. It is very, very difficult to help the victims of this crime, even if they have been rescued, because they have been lied to, betrayed, deceived so many times, and usually at a very impressionable age. The average age for girls to be trafficked is like 13 or 14. They don't trust anybody, including people who are generally trying to help them. I used to work with a center in Baltimore that rescued girls off the streets and tried to give them a high school education and some marketable employment skills. They ran an organic garden. They raised chickens, all kinds of cool stuff. But occasionally the girls would even go back to the streets because in a very grotesque way, this is where they found security. It's what they knew. It is very hard to help the victims. But there are organizations all across the country, often faith-based, who do try to help the victims of this crime and try to help combat it. And they're always looking for financial support, for volunteers. And if you find it in your heart to try to help some of these victims, do check out the local organizations, like even Salvation Army often shelters victims of human trafficking on a temporary basis. There are shelters like Porchlight, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Polaris. They're always looking for support. So please, please do reach out and help these organizations that are trying to combat this crime.
Thank you for your time. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You asked a few minutes ago what parents can do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, parents, please monitor your kids' social media sites. Do it with them, because you're not trying to set off World War III. Do it with them so that you can turn it into an educational experience rather than a police action. Point out websites that have a lot of red flags, pictures that never in a million years should have been posted on the internet. And you might even soften the blow a little bit more by saying, look, you know this stuff, but you've got this naive friend. You really need to explain to her what might happen if she answers some of these online ads. And what happens if a girl shows up for a great modeling opportunity or a bit part in a movie or to participate in a hot new band? These people go to great lengths to make sure that the interview room, unquote, looks really authentic. And when she comes in, the guy will probably be on a fake phone call pretending like He's organizing the remake of a big holiday Hollywood film, and he's looking for upcoming new stars, anything that would really get a 14-year-old's blood just thrilled, okay? And then he'll ask a question. Honey, do you have time to sit down and chat for a few minutes, or is somebody waiting for you? Now, she's all excited. She hears the first part. Oh, goody, he wants to take me seriously. He wants to talk to me. But what he's really asking is, have you come alone and unprotected? And if she says, oh, no, that's okay, nobody's waiting, then he'll sit down and chat with her for 5 or 10 minutes. Get her so excited she can't stand it. Then I'll say, okay, let me show you the studio. Well, the studio is a closet, and he locks her in. And in a few hours after he calls his contact with the Russian mafia, she'll be drugged and boxed up in a crate labeled some kind of industrial equipment, and she's on her way to a brothel or a harem in the Persian Gulf. Hello. If she says, however, well, my dad, he had to run down to his karate studio down the street, but he'll be back in about 10 minutes. In that case, she will not get, quote, the job, unquote, and she'll go back home to her family. You need to warn your kids about this. Runaways are at extreme risk. Predators are looking for them. They can spot them at 50 yards. They know all the things to say to get the kid to say, oh, thank goodness, somebody who really understands, somebody who's going to help me. Yeah, they'll help you okay for 15 minutes, and then you'll spend the rest of your life paying for it. If you know any kid who's planning to run away from home, please help them find some other solution, because they've got a target on them the size of Brazil.
Before you go, Nancy, and this is certainly something that we want to connect and post on our site too, but before you go, let folks know how they can reach out to you and how they can get your series of books.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Okay. My website is nancyhartwell.com, and my books are available on Amazon.com and also through my website. Harem Slave, the flagship book, by the way, it reached number 7 in all fiction on Amazon, and it has been translated into French, Spanish, and German. You can get them through Amazon.com in translation or in English, either hard copy or electronically, however you wish, or you can get them directly from my website.
Well, we're going to stay in touch. This is definitely something that needs to be, and as Reggie said, needs to be discussed. These traffickers need to be exposed. And it's horrific. I mean, it's just, you think, in this country, at least, especially, you know, as a parent, you worry. We see shootings in schools and different things like that. So you're worried once your kid leaves the house. We don't think about this. And this is something that people should definitely not only think about, but get involved and see those signs, those warning signs. And I would also say, too, that, you know, the internet was a good thing, but it's also a bad thing, because this is where you get these type of things to take place. But as Reggie said, keep doing what you're doing, keep fighting the fight, and we appreciate you. God bless, and thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for letting me get the word out. I really, really appreciate it. God bless you too.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
We'll be right back. do, do, do.